Hi,
Hey there.
Robert.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to another Cambridge edition, exciting
mostly,
edition of Cambridge Inside Out.
And it's mostly
I'm Robert
Cambridge
Winters.
Inside. We're not out.
And it's that's right. It's more inside than out still.
But we'll talk about the outside. Yeah.
That's right. I have ventured outward. It is true. It is true.
We have our names on. So I am Junie Nathans, but it's, yes. I think my name is appearing there as yours is, right?
All right. So today is November 17th. 2020, and
yes.
The last time we met here in these fine
That's
places,
right.
it
election
was actually
night.
We were in anticipation
That's
of
right.
the election that was taking place that day.
Yes.
Nobody had any full belief that we would have ever actually known election results by election
no,
night.
But it was nerve-wracking for those few days. If he had, you know, it was so hard to hang on to hope that he would not be elected.
You know, partly because I'm a math geek, so I, you know, and I could kind of wrap my head around some of these things. I had heard all of the advanced things about what was called the red mirage. People love to
oh.
make phrases, right?
Yeah.
How it might
yeah.
appear to have certain results, but then by
right.
the time all these ballots were counted,
yes.
that there would be a blue wave or something
right.
like that. You know, red mirage, blue wave. There was all
right.
these funny phrases,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But I have to say that when I went to bed that night, Tuesday night.
How late? I stayed up till
probably after at least 1 o'clock.
Okay.
I looked at the margins in various states, like Pennsylvania,
right.
whatever, and I said, well, I'm glad I had psychologically prepared myself to be accepting of a bad result, because I was able to go to bed that night going, oh, well, that
but
sucks.
But even though you knew that Pennsylvania could not count mail-in ballots,
I thought I saw the margins as being
oh.
so large that I thought, can you really, I didn't know how many mail-in ballots there were relative to others.
Well, apparently a lot.
Apparently a lot. So I went to bed basically saying, oh, well,
oh,
and
yes.
and then I woke up, I got to say this, I
yeah.
woke up Wednesday morning and I went, well, let me go check it on the internet just to
wow.
find out how miserable
really.
Life is.
Yeah.
And then it was like Christmas morning for me.
Yeah, because
you know,
what had changed? I'm trying to remember what changed that morning. The margins changed.
It wasn't just that, but it was also the trends and the
right.
people who know and who I understood why they were saying what they were saying.
Yeah.
The results favor Biden now. And I looked at it and I said, you're right. They do. I believe it. So
you
at
see,
that point, I kind of felt pretty secure that in fact, sooner or later, all these states are going to start dropping like dominoes.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of how long you have to wait until
right.
the numbers start shifting.
Right.
There were a few moments when I went, oh, but then, you know, I could see the trend going and I was,
yeah.
and I was actually doing little calculations like a math geek of saying, what's the percent turnout? At what rate is the shift happening? And I said, oh, Pennsylvania, when we get to about 95% counted, that's when that's going to turn.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, but 95% counted wasn't until like Friday, right?
Right. But the thing is,
time.
I was watching it happen. So
yeah.
I kind of knew that when it
I
was
see.
Down in the 80s, that it was when
right.
we hit about 94, 95%, Pennsylvania is going to flip the other way. And sure enough, that's exactly how it worked out. So I understood that intellectually,
yeah.
you know,
and
I understood Arizona and Nevada together. Well, that's enough anyway.
But
right?
meanwhile, you had Giuliani and you had the Sun saying, he was 400,000 ahead in Pennsylvania that night. How does that change? Well, you count the vote. I mean,
count
I can't believe people were saying that.
You know, I think it part of it was
insane.
The
insane. I won because I was for.
I think part of it was the narrative that had been
yeah.
set up
right.
by Mr. Trump and others to sort of be able to say that if it does start to go that way, we can start challenging it. Now, that was a futile hope from the beginning. I mean, and I, the part of the reason I say that with emphasis is that I have never once heard of a situation where if something is actually put before judges,
right.
that they do anything other than default toward A, gauging correct voter intent
right.
in the case of disputed ballots,
right.
and basically enfranchisement. They, you know, even conservative justices still default toward enfranchisement, generally speaking. So,
oh, wait, in 2000, you think that happened in 2000?
The big mistake in 2000, honestly,
oh,
and
oh.
I, you know, again, I'm going to make some, I have made enemies by saying this.
Yeah.
But there were people I know, people, including one person who ran for Secretary of State here, who agreed with me completely, yeah, is that the Democratic Party screwed that up. They should have asked for a full statewide recount from the beginning. And because they chose to seek only, to cherry pick only those precincts that they thought would be beneficial for them, they sealed their fate.
Wait, I thought they did ask for that. And then the,
only
then
at the very end, you know, and at that point I said, you know, I mean, what are you going to, so you're going to make your case that, you know, to do one thing. And then when things, the cards aren't going your way, well, then you say, oh, excuse me.
I
think a lot of the lawyers, they had teams of lawyers, including people who are friends of mine.
There was a great documentary on that. Covers intricate than I. They threw out 19,000 votes.
Right. I don't know really how it worked in Florida, whether in fact had they had done a full statewide recount, whether
they would have still found a they would have found a reason. I mean,
it would have been still very. It would have been close. It could have gone the other way.
But you know, we're talking that butterfly ballot. I mean, in Jewish communities, come on, they didn't vote for Pat Buchanan. Even Pat Buchanan said,
you know, people forget that prior to 1996, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, we used punch cards and butterfly ballots.
I think I remember that.
Remember that? You actually had to put you had to put the card into the machine and punch the little holes through. And then I remember taking mine out, holding it up and blowing on it to make sure that the Chad, you know, which rumor has it Chad stood for card hole accumulated debris. Because it was really when you had a whole room full of this stuff, you had to sweep up the Chad, the accumulated debris.
I forgot that. So it's funny that it didn't happen before, but that was, talk about a stolen election or not stolen.
Well, you know, I had served on this committee, this technical committee for the computerization of the Cambridge elections in the mid-90s. And when we were deciding on the voting technology that we were going to use, not only for municipal elections, but also to replace the antiquated statewide elections, including those damn punch cards, that we insisted on certain things like a verifiable auditable trail.
A backup.
So that's why we went for MarkSense ballots and AccuVote scanners so that even if something went terribly wrong, you go, well, let's look at the ballots and you could just do that.
Right.
And that was very satisfying for me that when we implemented it, that's exactly the system we went in. But when 2000 rolled around just a few years later, it was like all the various little worst case scenarios that we had discussed were coming true with national implications.
Oh, awful.
I was beside myself. I remember when the Bush versus the Supreme Court decision came down. I was working in the Harvard Mathematics Department at the time, and when I heard that news, I started losing it. And like the chair of the math department was going, "Calm down, Robert. Calm down." I was ready to just, you know, punch a wall out. You know, and it wasn't just because of the particular person who won or lost. It was that the machinery of democracy, the elections,
had
the voting methods were so screwed up.
Right.
You know, and even the Republicans, you know, Help America Vote Act, all of these other things happened subsequently basically say, we got to do this a little bit better. We're not giving away the right of individual states to run their elections, but we need to establish some standards here. You know, so. But I have to say, and I'm very pleased that not only of the actual results of the election, but that various commissions and people who know in the know are saying this was a very secure election.
Right, I've heard that. Yeah.
Quite probably, and probably certainly, the most secure one we've ever actually had, in spite of all the innovations, in spite of all of the, you know, the new technologies, the new system, the protocols, you know. I mean, even Massachusetts, if you think about it, you know, we're a little stodgy, you know, kind of a stodgy New England hamlet here in Massachusetts in ways. And the fact that they actually ramped up and they screwed up a little bit maybe in the primary, you know, in terms of the timing.
Right.
But ultimately, this system they put in place worked. And you could verify whether your ballot was received.
Right. In many states, you could do that track.
Yes. I mean, we did good. We really did good.
Do you know the final mail-in ballot tally? I mean, I know before that night, it was like 90 million people had voted early, or, well, I don't know if it was early or mail-in ballots, but they knew they'd already voted.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
I think it'll be probably 2/3 of the 152 million people voted. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's a world record, and I think, you know, this is sort of an important point. I think for everybody in this country to understand is that Joe Biden just broke the world record for most votes in any presidential candidate, and the person who now holds the record for number two most votes is Mr. Trump, right? So, the thing is that for those people who choose not to understand the necessity of at least coming to some terms with those people, they really need to look at that and understand this was not a landslide victory. It was a clear victory.
Yeah. But, it's landslide electorally, but who looks at that? Because that's a whole other issue.
Electoral college. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was, and actually, I don't know that I don't remember what constitutes landslide. I know in
terms of popular vote. Well, Kellyanne Conway said that in 2016 because of the electoral. They're throwing that out at her now.
When your guy wins, you say it's a landslide. Or
that's the exact same number.
Even if you squeak by with two votes, you call it a mandate, right? So
no, but it's the exact same number. It's 306 to 232. That's amazing.
I mean, I don't know that the election results constitute any kind of mandate for anything specific.
Oh no, there's no mandates here.
Yeah, but in my own personal view of the world, as a kind of a lifelong centrist, the fact is that if we can't simultaneously address the division in terms of this election, but also the impasse. And the partisanship, in Congress.
Yes.
I mean, I think we have to basically say, look, we all got to take 12 steps back here and kind of think about politics in a different way.
Right. Also, when people look at those maps, which is red and blue, and if you look at a real map, it's red and blue in every state.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows somebody that voted for Trump. I knew that in 2016, and unfortunately, I hear it now in 2020. So everybody has family members that voted for this person. You don't get 80 million or 79 million people, or I'm sorry, 73, let's not give them more, without somebody voting for him.
You know, it's funny how symbolism sort of, it affects people. Maybe what we need to do is we need to ban the colors red and blue for future election.
Yeah. So it's purple. Let's all do
everything in shades of purple or something like that. Yeah. You know, but I think it basically kind of, it's sort of like, when we were kids, I remember in the early 60s, it was the 100th year anniversary of the Civil War. And as kids that in toy stores all across the United States, they were selling uniforms and, pop guns and hats and everything
from
gray or blue. So kids were buying either gray uniforms or blue uniforms. Are you Rebs or Yanks? Right. And we had it was in New York City. We had like warfare. I mean, we had gangs. We were, 6 years old and we were gangsters.
Okay.
We were Yankees. We had blue suits, right? Yeah. But on the people on the other side of 20th Avenue, they were gray. And if you went over to 18th Avenue, I was gray over there.
That was the anniversary. Is that what it was?
It was the 100th anniversary of the Civil War. And the toy manufacturers wanted to capitalize on it. And as little kids, we bought into it. It was blue versus gray. At St. Luke's School down the street from us, there were two side entrances. One said Yanks and one said Rebs. And that stayed there. It's like early graffiti for like probably 20 more years afterwards. So we're kind of at Yanks versus Rebs now. And it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah. I think it's time, kids. It's time to put away those little gray and blue uniforms, or those red and blue uniforms. Put them away in a box somewhere where the moon don't shine. And start acting like adults,
So you're pretty positive, given that there's 330 million guns in this country.
I'm totally okay with it. And I'm perfectly respectful of if people in the state of Kentucky feel strongly that, that part of growing up is your dad or mom getting you a gun and teaching you how to shoot or whatever.
Well, I'm talking about a potential civil war.
I'm not worried about it.
Okay.
I worry about brush fires. I think we are already seeing bits of that, And it doesn't help that people have been trained for 4 years to believe, pardon my French, but believe bullshit.
Yeah, Maricopa County. You saw the people out there with guns because it's a carry, open carry state.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
But there are also people on the left thinking that it's perfectly okay to walk up to a Trump supporter and cold cock them because right. No, you're not, that's not okay.
Yeah, that crazies on both sides.
They're crazy on both sides. And I think the only mandate that I see out of an election like this is to realize that if we don't get our act together as a country, we're going to be in deep trouble.
Well, the big difference is social media and all the different platforms, and everyone has a voice. I mean, if you look at stuff from 50 years ago, you didn't have that many outlets.
You know, people often will correctly point out the democratizing quality of social media. Anybody can get in on it, right? It's not exclusive. It's open to all.
You can publish your own books now.
You can publish your own books. You can present yourself as a legitimate journalist, even if you're not.
Set up a website that looks very legitimate, and it's
And the thing is, then people will buy into it. In a way, it's funny. I'm going to sound like an elitist now, but to me, I think that now I really respect the fact that once upon a time there were like three networks and basically a Walter Cronkite and,
Dave Brinkley. Dinosaur. You're not an elitist. You sound like a dinosaur.
I know, but the thing is
I understand.
What was really, really a good thing about that is that
everybody had a TV
some gatekeepers. True. And that's the elitist aspect of this. You had gatekeepers about news who say, well, I'm sorry, this is real. This is not real.
I see what you're saying.
And this is useful.
People believed Walter Cronkite because everybody was watching the one of three stations, because everybody, no matter how much money you had, people didn't have cable then. They didn't have, but everyone had a TV mostly.
That's right.
And you all could turn into that.
And if Walter Cronkite came out and just started spewing bulldinky one day, then he would lose his moral authority, and he knew it. So he had to maintain a good standard. I think it was actually Lyndon Baines Johnson who, in 1968, after Walter Cronkite gave a real exposé on the Vietnam War, and he just is, and people reported this. They said, "Well, when I lost, because then Johnson, like within a week, declared that he was not going to seek a re-election as your president. Yeah. I will not seek, nor shall I accept the nomination of my party as your president."
Yeah.
And then he said, "It was when I lost Walter. That's when I knew." And that says a lot, Right now, there's nobody even remotely close to that in terms of having authority as a journalistic figure in this state, in this country. And nor is there even a single publication that you can now look to.
Bill Moyers tried to do that for PBS, and he still has,
I can understand why they do, but I used to at least think, well, I'll just go to the New York Times if I want it to be objective. And they're more objective than most, but the thing is, they got sucked right down that tube too, and started taking sides relentlessly as well.
Yeah, they still have some varied opinion makers there. But
I know. No, I agree. And the thing is, so this is I just view this as an opportunity now, for journalistic outlets, for political people, to basically rediscover their legitimacy.
But you have to remember, I mean, you do a service with your Cambridge Civic Journal, you have Cambridge Day, you have the Pat, whatever, but, and we have Wicked Local, whatever, but most of the people in this country have lost their local news.
That's true.
That's a fact. So,
that's right.
So online is everything. But if you don't report on local things happening, that's really bad. School committee meetings and all that. I mean,
I think that there is a model that's out there ready to be tried, which basically puts together reputable local internet style reporters like me in my own pathetic little way and marries up with print journalism.
Yeah.
So that we're kind of doing a bit of a hybrid, so that one can support the other.
WBUR has online presence.
Yes, yes. So the thing is,
but we live in a very rich media, environment.
I know, but the thing is one thing I've also noted. Yeah. I remember being quoted loudly about this one time, which is that there are great disadvantages to being in a city like Cambridge, in that we sit on the shoulder of a bigger city, and that a typical Cambridge resident, and whether this has to do with looking at municipal elections or issue local issues or whatever, maybe it's a bit different now. But the thing is that. A typical Cambridge resident, it was probably let's do the newspaper version of this.
Yeah.
If you looked and saw what newspaper is being delivered to their house, it might be the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal,
Washington Post.
Yeah. Right, Washington Post. And then another people in another part of town, it might be the Boston Herald or whatever, or the Boston Globe or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time when a newspaper like the Cambridge Chronicle had a circulation of over 20,000 people. And
I had a subscription years ago.
Right? But the thing they also had larger families, so that one newspaper in this house meant three or four more people might be reading it. So their reach was the majority of the people in the city.
Yeah.
And that was a good thing. And I think in the days of Elliot Spalding and others who followed, it was an important piece of what glued the city together, is to have a strong, reputable paper that really had wide circulation, a newspaper really, literally of general circulation.
Yeah.
The thing is we don't have that now. And again, I want the Chronicle or whatever else to be that. But I think the only way you can make it work is you've got to marry it up with the kind of blogosphere aspect of things, and you need to be able to pick and choose and say, okay, this is legit, this is fake news, this is just somebody's spew.
I think we're better
off. You have to curate.
Some places we do have that. I also subscribe to ProPublica. Do you know them? ProPublica.
Yes. Yeah. And, no, I'm on so many lists, but I have to tell you, one of the things that's really bizarre, just speaking to the presidential election just a little bit more, is that, just because I'm curious about political rhetoric, I'm on lists from MoveOn.org, and Democracy for America, and some of the really wackadoodle socialist entities. And I'm also receiving these various things from, like, you know, Make America Great Again thing, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's been very interesting just to watch how this has played out, especially post-election, where.
Good for you that you're on both, because you're being a responsible.
I'm just trying to see where are you people coming from, you know?
Yeah, I can't.
And there came a point, when Mr. Trump started saying, no, I won this, when he obviously had lost, that it started to take on an almost surreal quality.
Mm.
And then a person I know who is kind of a big shot in the Democratic Party circles, even nationally, pointed out to me something which I then saw repeated in various other publications, which is that what's really happening now is Trump knows damn well he lost, but he's raising money because there's campaign debts to be paid.
Yeah.
And he's basically taking full advantage, like the grifter that he is, to generate money based on false pretenses.
Oh yeah.
And then, and if you look the fine print, it says explicitly this money can be used for blah, blah, blah.
Oh, it's not
blah,
even
blah,
fine
blah.
Print. I've seen it. Yeah. It's pretty much clear that it, because they have to say it's to pay off campaign stuff. Some of it's for the election.
But they're also throwing it into a political action committee. And to me, this is the depressing part of it.
Yeah.
Which means when Joe Biden takes the oath of office, is that Mr. Trump is not going to just go away. He's basically going to have a well-funded mechanism where he's going to basically be trying to put himself out there every single day to be sort of the anti-president.
Well, the fact that he got that many votes, you're right, because we were all hoping, well, the Republicans now can breathe a sigh of relief. No, they can't.
Right.
Look at how many votes he got, you know?
That's right. And, so if they're successful, they will till those fields, till the soil and grow that crop of the not so loyal opposition. And that's really what we have to look forward to. And that's what concerns me more than anything else.
No, I agree.
The fact that some wackadoodle soon to be ex-president is saying, I won, when you know it isn't true, that doesn't bother me that much. What bothers me is the fact that he's basically creating a kind of an alternative reality into the future. I'm also quite concerned of the fact that, well, the coronavirus, the failure to address it, and the fact that he's not going to cooperate in a transition. And I'm also very concerned, and I'm not a person who's pro-war, but if you're going to basically just yank troops out of various countries, not because it, over the advice of your own military commanders, just so that you can tell people you fulfilled a campaign promise, that bothers me a lot. I mean, there are human beings there. There are lives that could be lost as a result of that. Yes, let's wean ourselves off of the endless wars, but
let's do it rationally. He's never one that wants to go. He was against the wars. That's one thing I could say about him. But the way he's doing it,
So I mean, I am somewhat concerned about the management of the next month and a half until 2 months. Until the inauguration.
They've got it, the whole GSA thing and that woman that's supposedly in charge. That's crazy.
It is crazy, yeah. You know, but then again, can any of us really be surprised that this is how it ends? You know,
no.
I don't see how any of us really deserve to be surprised.
All right, so we're on our last minute of this segment. So next segment we should cover.
Let's get a little local.
Let's get local.
Let's get that? Local and loco.
Tip O'Neill, Think globally, act locally.
Globally, act locally. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So we should definitely do some more of that here.
Yeah.
There are some disturbing trends, I think, in terms of the coronavirus infection rates locally, not just nationally.
Yeah.
But even locally, and no answers yet as to what the real causes are. But we want to definitely talk some about that.
Okay.
And some things that happened at the local city council meeting.
Right, and some of the closings that.
And the rather kind of interesting closing of the meeting last night. Yeah, I think.
Oh, that, but also I was thinking of the.
Absolutely true. You know, so.
All right.
Anyway.
Okay, so we'll see you in. We're off right now.
So we're going to take 3 minutes break, and I'll see you then on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.